All the second stage tanks now pressurized. 35 seconds and counting. We are still going.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lindin.
Are we beginning to see the formation of a fundamental shift in the American dream of home ownership?
A weekly mortgage market update.
20 seconds and counting.
Providing up-to-the-minute information.
The of Chinese investors in the real estate market, and they're really starting to have an impact, but it's only
on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry.
T-15 seconds. Guidance is internal.
If you look at it on a dollar value, it's significant. If you look at it on a unit basis, it's inconsequential to the overall big market.
To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972.
Here's the deal. How much of the market, real estate market, is comprised of this type of property?
12, 11, 10, 9, ignition sequence start.
And now, here's your host of Lickin' on Lending,
3, 2,
David Lickin.
So good to have you with us, everybody. It's Monday, November 27th, 2017. We hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving break, and we're honored to have you here with us. Excited to have you joining in. Again, there's so much to be grateful for, and someone wrote one of the best things he could be grateful for is Cordray finally resigned. But you know what's so interesting about that? I'm sure we're going to get an update from Alice on this, but now we have not just a one-headed monster there with CFPB. We have a two-headed monster. So we've got who's going to win in this one. It'll be real interesting. We have the Cordray's appointment as well as a Trump's appointment. So it'll be very interesting to see who comes out on the top. So a lot of developed over the Thanksgiving break, and we're looking forward to giving you an update. As you know, we're doing a series of podcasts on marketing through the internet or through social media. We're seeing some real interesting trends. And today in the Hot Topics segment, we've got David Shalabro, who's the founder and chief growth officer of Harvest ROI. I like that name. And we'll be discussing why inbound is the future. Inbound marketing is the future for the mortgage lending market. So anyway, we're looking at marketing, and we're going to be talking about that with David a little bit later. He has 25 years of marketing and sales experience, and he knows the mortgage industry, and he's a student of it. So more on that later. But anyway, welcome to the podcast. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals and an increasing number of realtors that are listening in. And we're grateful to have you as our listener. Our commitment to you is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime, anywhere. I listen to it when I'm on the treadmill. You know, I learn from my own podcast. Gotta go. There's a lot of content in here. We're really excited to be sharing it with you. And we appreciate you sharing it with others. Now, let's say a special thank you goes out to our sponsors, Arch MI, the creator of the innovative RateStar program. Motivity Solutions, now part of the Black Knight family. And Black Knight is becoming a sponsor, about ready to get them launched. Also, Motivity provides real-time reporting, dashboard, and scorecards. Then Velma, an efficient mortgage marketing and email platform that we use regularly and encourage you to consider it. Simplifile, real-time electronic communication exchange with your closing agents. Great platform. We'll hear from Nancy Alley in just a little bit. Also, the Mortgage Collaborative, the power of the network. You want to talk about that because it's not so much always what you know. Got to know a lot. Got to be smart. Got to know what you're doing. But it's also oftentimes who you know that can make such a difference. The power of the network, Mortgage Collaborative. Then Finastra is the third largest fintech company in the world with approximately 10,000 employees in 42 countries and 9,000 companies worldwide. So, big company. We're honored to have all of them. And, of course, we're very fortunate to have as regular guests on the program, Alice Alvey of Union Home, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, Joe Farr of MBS Quoteline, and now we have Alan Pollack, who's joined me in the consulting business with TMS. This is David Lickin, your host. We're thrilled to have you here. Normally, we'd be having Rob Van Horst give us an update on the conferences, but his Thanksgiving break, he did not get us over our recording, so we'll just run through the conferences that are coming up. December 4th through the 5th is the Summit on Diversity and Inclusion. It's in the Capitol Hill Hilton in Washington, D.C. Encourage you to check that out. Also, January 2nd, the Mergers and Acquisition Workshop will just precede the Independent Mortgage Banking Workshop. And that is both of those. They start on the 22nd. They go through the 25th of January. It's going to be at the Ritz-Carlton in Amelia Island, Florida. Looking forward to being there. You can check out all the conferences and where we're speaking and various things going on at our Lincoln on Lending website. Again, while you're checking out the conferences, go to the MBA's website for all the MBA's conferences. And while you're there, sign up to become a member of the Mortgage Action Alliance. You do not need to be a member of the MBA. We're grateful for our partnership with the MBA. So let's run over to Les Parker. I listened to his segment. He does a good job. They're really working on these, and a lot of time goes into it. So Gary Kentrebone does the editing, and Les does the talking. So what you got for us this week? It's got a Christmas theme. I think you'll enjoy it.
Loan Logic sponsors Market Logic Live.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
It's her most wait-watching time of the year. With the buck jingle belling and everyone telling Merkel to retire, it's her most wait-watching time of the year. A food fight in Germany has Merkel yearning for a French diet rather than eating crow. According to Gallup, personal spending on Christmas this year will be $4 shy of the most since 1999 at $862. Where can I sign up for that amount? The international economic picture supports a positive environment for lower U.S. rates. These views are my own. Go to loanlogics.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
Well, there you have it. A good Christmas theme to kick off now that we're into Thanksgiving. Well, all the stores, and of course, the stores have been filled with Christmas decorations for some time now, but we're now into full-on Christmas shopping. Black Friday was good, as we heard. And we've got with us today, as we have each and every week, Joe Farr, giving us an update on what's going on with the markets. And Joe, I think your mic's turned on, so take it away. How are the markets behaving?
Yeah,
you know, overcoming a stuffed turkey? Did you have a good Thanksgiving?
Well, I did. I spent it out in your neighborhoods. We had, as you know, it was gorgeous weather, and we had a great family get-together, and it was all good. Thank you.
We should give your place a plug. Anyone looking for a great place, you lease this out to people. It is a gorgeous place on the lake. Lake Travis. And it is. You have a gorgeous two places there. And so what a great spot for a family reunion. But anyway, let's talk about the markets. What you got for us?
So we're up a little bit today, and that's despite better than expected new home sales. I don't know if you've seen that, but it came in at the best level in 10 years. But quite frankly, this is a highly volatile measure. It's got a big margin of error. And so, you know, there's very little reaction to it in the market, as investors probably discounted it somewhat. But even though that it's up, most recent reading on existing home sales were good. The housing starts were good. The home builder confidence is high. And so, you know, we're seeing pretty good signs for the housing market. So I can't complain about that.
Not for sure.
Last week, Dave, as everyone knows, it was a short week, and we did see an improvement in MBS prices by about 10 basis points, resulting in just a couple basis points improvement in mortgage rates. The economic data had little effect on prices. You know, as I mentioned earlier, existing home sales were better than expected. Durable orders were a big miss to the downside, but that was all due to transportation orders, which is very volatile. And without the transportation order miss, durable orders rose about as expected. Consumer sentiment was good. The minutes of the November 1st Fed meeting contained no surprises, so they weren't a market mover. And as Les mentioned, I think he mentioned something about Janet Yellen. Actually, he was talking about Merkel all the time. Yellen last week announced that she will not continue on the FOMC after Jerome Powell sworn in, or whoever gets sworn in. She had the option to stay on as a governor for another 6 years, so she did not exercise that, and that leaves one more position on the Fed for President Trump to nominate. So he's currently got to find about four or five new people. I think it's four. He's got to find four new, and then you got the New York president to be selected by the New York Fed. Looking at this week coming up, it's really a big week for a lot of things. First, the non-economic stuff, which is was something less touched on, but Congress is back, and we're going to hear more about the tax reform proposals from the Senate. We got discussions heating up on the funding of the U.S. government, currently expected to funding expires on December 8th, so something's got to happen pretty quick on that. We have Jerome Powell's confirmation hearing as the next Fed chair. And Janet Yellen is scheduled to testify before the Joint Committee, a Congressional Joint Committee on the Economic Outlook. That's going to happen Wednesday at 10 o'clock. Lots of Fed speakers this week. So, you know, what they say, you know, could impact markets. Right now, there's a very, very heavy expectation for a December rate hike. And so if they were to begin to put that into question, which I doubt they would, it could be a pretty significant event. And as Les did talk about, Angela Merkel is trying to pull together a coalition to run the German government. And so, you know, anything slipping there could be a market moving event. Then we got the economic data coming out, second estimate of third quarter GDP comes out on Wednesday, along with pending home sales. Core PCE will come out on Thursday, and ISM will come out on Friday. So those are pretty significant events to pay attention to.
It's really good to hear about existing home sales, housing starts. That's very, very interesting. You do a great job on your website. I tell all our customers about it, constantly talking about it. It's one of those things, I bring it up because I'm sitting at a meeting saying, hey, do you know what's going on in the markets? And they go, I said, just a second, I'll tell you, and I'll show your app to
everybody.
It's pretty cool. Do a good job with what you're doing, and kudos to you. We're grateful to have you on the program. Glad to hear you had a great Thanksgiving Day. So, folks, we're going to be right back after a brief break. And, Joe, thank you so much for bringing an update. Get signed up for MBS Quote Line. You can get a free trial if you haven't already done so by getting a hold of Joe at 512-637-1763 or go to the website, www.mbsquoteline.com. Folks, we're going to be right back after this brief break.
Are you using one of those expensive CRMs that your loan officers won't use? If so, then give my friends at Velma a call and let them help you create a customer journey that relies on the data and not on loan officer interaction. I encourage you to consider working with Velma to create a truly automated marketing experience for your organization. Velma makes marketing automation easy. Schedule a demo today at Velma.com, V-E-L-M-A.com.
The Mortgage Collaborative was founded by former chairman of the NBA, John Robbins and David Kittle, and leaders at the forefront of the diversity movement in the real estate industry, Jim Park and Gary Acosta. The Mortgage Collaborative is the nation's only independent cooperative. The Collaborative provides its members the opportunity to meet and form meaningful relationships with top mortgage professionals and leaders in our industry. In a relationship-driven business such as ours, often who you know is as important as what you know. To learn more, go to mortgagecollaborative.com or call Rich Swarbinski at 440-552-0691. The power of the network.
So good to have you with us, everybody. And we have Alice Alvey back from probably Hurt Vince. I mean, is it a music festival as well as a Thanksgiving festival? Every time you get together with friends and family, it seems like there's as much music as there's probably good food. But good to have you back, Alice.
Thanks, Dave. Yes, I was unfortunately not directly with my family, but you have to love, you know, FaceTime to be able to feel like you're there, and they had all the instruments out, that's for sure. There was a big jam session going on at my Michigan family. So
yeah, it's so neat. So what do you think about Cordray? And the two appointments? We now have a two-headed monster there with CFPB. What do you think of that?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, I think one of the first things I read was Elizabeth Warren coming out. As soon as President Trump appointed Mulvaney as the interim director, I think this Warren came out right away and said, he can't do that, right? The Dodd-Frank Act already says that, you know, the deputy director automatically assumes the position in the event that, you know, the position is vacated. And I think that's where part of the, you know, the angst is coming from, is obviously Leandra English, I think that's how she says her name, is the one who thought that she was entitled to the job as interim director, sorry, acting director. So anyway, Mulvaney being appointed, there was definitely some kind of CFPB's general counsel that, you know, seemed to indicate that even from their front that the this appointment will stand. So that all just remains to be seen. I certainly am not a lawyer. I'm not sure who's going to stay at work when you think you're going to be appointed a boss and someone puts out a memo and says, don't listen to a thing that this person has to say, right?
So, exactly.
That's what she's faced with right now. Yeah, I understand. I don't know what else might be at play there. So, but at least from what we can tell on the outside, it's still to be determined. But Mulvaney definitely is the one who people should be following today, is whether or not, if you're over at the CFPB, he's your boss. The other thing that we are watching is definitely the tax reform. So as that starts to move forward, you know, I mentioned on a prior show that, you know, the mortgage interest deduction is becoming less and less important no matter which version you look at. So when they increase the standard deduction to, you know, $24,400 for a married couple and over $12,000 for a single person, that makes a difference on what size loan amounts and so forth will be impacted by the, you know, make it a reasonable option for you at, to have the mortgage interest deduction as benefit. So the rent versus buy comparisons are something all loan officers are going to have to be faced with relearning and understanding your market before you shout out that, oh yeah, mortgage interest deduction is a benefit. You'll want to make sure you understand the new nuances in the finances once these bills make their way to the president, because it certainly seems like they're going to make their way. The good news about tax reform moving is that all the other bills we've been waiting to get some attention on are finally getting some attention. So there hasn't been any movement yet, though, on the regulatory relief package that includes the transitional licensing and about six other things. But we will be watching that closely. It is getting movement along with four other bills, including flood reform, that has H.R. 2874 is reauthorizing the program. It combines seven other bills. So that does look like it'll start getting some attention. So now that tax reform is through the House and in the hands of the Senate, we can get the House to pay attention to a few other things. So we'll have more for everybody next week and the week after as those get moving before they go on holiday recess. That's my report, Dave.
That's your report, and you're sticking to it. Well, I appreciate
That's
you
right.
so much, Alice. Yeah, she now is.
Do it.
Yeah, well, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens with the CFPB appointment. Not surprising, Elizabeth Warren is weighing in quickly on that, anticipating her becoming more part of the Democratic lineup for the next election. So we'll see. Anyway, good to have you here. Again, Alice Alvey, Vice President of Education and Training at Union Home Mortgage. We're very grateful to Bill Cosgrove at the company for letting her continue with the program and giving us a legislative update. Folks, we're going to be right back after this brief break from a word from David Bolin at Finastra.
Hey, thanks a lot, David. Finastra is extremely proud to be a key sponsor of the Licking on Lending program. Known formerly as DNH, Finastra's global lending division provides end-to-end solutions and innovation to the full spectrum of lenders, including independent mortgage bankers, community banks and credit unions, and even the largest banks globally. Learn more about how you provide an innovative digital experience for your borrowers by leveraging our multi-channel point-of-sale solution, which includes the new MortgageBot Mobile, by visiting our website at finastra.com.
Simplifile has technology that gives you the ability to collaborate with settlement agents via real-time chat and messaging, allowing you to track changes, send, receive, and validate documents, as well as obtain status updates and deal with issues as they arise. All of this in a real-time electronic communication exchange. And best of all, you have a complete audit trail of all communications. To learn more, go to simplifile.com or call our good friend Nancy Alley at 1-800-460-5657.
Good to have you with us, everybody. Again, just are grateful for you, our listening audience. We've got Alan Pollock on here. Alan will be joining me. We're launching the new Tech Stack Radio program. It'll be going live in January. We're going to have some of the regulars that are on this program joining us there. But again, the whole focus is going to be talking about technology in the mortgage industry. Good to have you with us, friend. Alan, did you have a good Thanksgiving?
I did. It was great. Had a nice long drive to think all about our new radio program. So lots of exciting stuff coming up. You know, one thing I did want to mention today, not only are we going to have great and exciting guests, but we're also looking to have good content. You know, we want to survey our listeners. And so I hope that we can bring some really good information from that. But in addition, we also are going to be creating a job board. So for anybody that is looking to put a word out of individuals that you're looking for, feel free to start sending that information over. And you can send it to Alan at, that's A-L-L-E-N, at tms-advisors.com. So David, in addition, there's just a, you know, coming off of a Thanksgiving week, it was kind of quiet coming up to the week and a little bit quiet so far this week. But, you know, in retrospect, looking at some of the topics we've been covering and where we are today, I thought I'd bring up an interesting article, which is that BankThink, which is a company out there, a publication, does think that the flood of bank email marketing boosts the risk of phishing attacks. And so I don't know if you recently heard, but Southern National Bancorp of Virginia in McLean disclosed in its quarterly filing that it suffered an attack from a malicious email where a scam gave outsiders access to personal information tied to an undisclosed number of customers about $175,000 in fraudulent wire transactions. And so we've all seen these come through. You get an email that says, sometimes it's even, there's a large majority of these coming from what it looks like is Apple. Your Apple Music subscription needs to be renewed. Please click here. And when people do that, it says, please verify yourself. And nobody knows that it looks like an Apple site, but it really isn't. And so they fill out their information, they validate their social security number, they put in their credit card information, and then at the end they say you'll be contacted by somebody, and now all their information has been provided to a hacker.
Yeah, Dan. Yeah, we've got to be so much smarter about this. We don't live in an innocent world anymore. There's those malicious people out there just doing some crazy stuff. That's a really good reminder. I hate to hear those news reports.
I think there's going to be, you know, because we're talking about marketing, I think there's going to be technology that will help you determine, are you some type of certificate or signed process that will verify that you are where you think you are. However, the number one tip that I could probably leave with everybody is, number one is banks and services do not ask for your information through an email. And when you get to that website or that landing site, make sure you look at the URL bar at the top. Sometimes the name of it, the before the .com, is anything. It can be anything. So it leads you to believe you are where you think you should be. But then if you look at the rest of it, it could be .someothername.com, which has nothing to do with where you are. And then verify that what you're looking at, the links are actually realistic and so forth.
Yep.
In addition, David, before we end today, I thought I would mention the Bitcoin price. Let me ask you, have you any idea what the price of Bitcoin is today?
I couldn't believe what it was the other day when you mentioned it. I went and looked it up, and it was a ridiculous amount. I let it escape me. So what is it up to today?
It is $9,496, and it has been increasing more than 12% in the last week, moving past 9,000 early Sunday. And the total market value is now more than $150 billion.
Wow. You know what? Should have sold some of my gold that I bought. Thought that was the best hedge and gone into that. Woulda, coulda, shoulda. So thanks for the update on all of that. And go ahead. You had another thought?
I was going to say, I'll actually end it. You know, funny you mentioned that. I'll end it. I read an article in Bloomberg that said that the adoption of Bitcoin by U.S. survivalists or doomsday preppers is the largest of all. So
sell your gold and going for Bitcoin. So, we got the prophet doctor coming up next. We'll get his take on all of that. So anyway, so good to have you here with us. Looking forward to launching Tech Stack Radio January, first week in January. Should be fun. Looking forward to it very much.
Thanks,
it out.
David.
We'll have the website up and running here pretty soon here. Open to sooner before that so people can get a feel for it. It'll be techstackradio.com. Alan, thank you so much. We're going to be right back after a word from ArchMI, Jim Jump. Jim, we appreciate you and the partnership with ArchMI. Here you go.
Thanks, David. Let me tell your audience a little bit about ArchMI RateStar. RateStar is the most sophisticated pricing solution for mortgage insurance quotes ever built. RateStar has an advanced revolutionary design. It's simple to use, it's easy to access, and it's fully mobile. You can access it anywhere, anytime. RateStar provides a more sophisticated and dynamic pricing solution, far superior than conventional rate sheets. It's available on loan origination systems through many pricing engines, and it rewards your origination of high-quality loans, again, with our most competitive rates. Of course, RateStar is backed by ArchMI's people power, providing superior support and service whenever you might need it. For more information about RateStar, please go to archmi.com or archmicu.com for credit unions. Thanks, David.
You know what? I love the part of that. The best part of every company is the people power, and they do have some great people there at ArchMI. Thanks, Jim, very much. Let's now run over to Motivity Solutions and get the KPI of the week from John Maynell, who is Motivity's VP of Client Services. So let's see. Which one is it this week? It is the KPI to underwriting. John?
Hi, Dave. Thanks very much. Great to be back. And this week's key performance indicator is application to underwriting cycle time. This KPI is a measurement delivered in business days, and tracking this metric helps lenders ensure that their processes upstream from underwriting are as efficient as they can be. Our clients generally find that the sooner their qualified borrowers receive an underwriting decision, the less likely those borrowers are to shop around. So this KPI can ultimately boost app-to-funded pull-through as well, which is the KPI we focused on last week. So we're really beginning to connect the dots between operational efficiency and customer satisfaction. And once again, this and other KPIs we will be talking about in the coming weeks always demonstrate that what gets measured gets results. And with that, I will thank you again, Dave, and turn it back to you.
So good. Thank you, John. Love the KPI of the week and get so much feedback from many of our listeners. Andy Schell, you're packing up and getting ready to head out to teach a whole bunch of CPAs. I mean, it's always fun to know that we knew you were smart, but you're the guy that's teaching ongoing continuing education. So hope you had a good Thanksgiving, and good to have you.
Well, thanks, Dave. Well, the Cowboys lost. We had lots of food, and I get to go talk to the CPAs who audit our industry this week. So that will be fun. It's really interesting to see the diversion of perspective among all of the CPAs. And, you know, there's a cluster of consensus, and then there's a large portion of outliers. And what we're hoping to do is spread the word about the consensus that's been built. The problem is the outliers don't attend these conferences anyway, so they're kind of on their own. But as far as the listeners go, we're almost into December, so it's almost year-end. So we should have our audit engagement already signed. We should be ready to go with our auditor. You know, we have to have audited financials submitted to HUD by March 31st. Otherwise, we start running the risk of having our HUD approval suspended. And your CPA will submit that through an online system. And your CPA has to include Yellow Book auditing techniques and the HUD liquidity and capital calculations. If your CPA auditor doesn't know that immediately off the top of their head, then you probably have the wrong CPA, but there's nothing you can do about it this year, which means you're going to have to make sure they do what needs to be done. Don't forget also, for those that are non-Fannie Freddie filers, that you have to submit your MBFRF. For those who don't file the MBFRF, you have to file the NMLS call report on March 31st as well. Sometimes the auditors do that, sometimes they don't. We can help do that. Also, it's year-end, right? So we've got HMDA. I know the mention of that word causes Alice to cringe. But we have HMDA coming up, so we have all of this origination data properly encapsulated so we can remit that to the government coming up, along with our 1098s, 1099s, W-2s, all that stuff that accounting has to do in January, and then also our tax returns. We have to get our tax returns ready. So before the end of the year, we have 30 days to do stuff that affects the tax return tax liability. It's important to think through that, talk to your tax advisor, and make certain that you've addressed all the issues that need to be addressed so that you minimize your tax liability to the maximum degree possible. Tax avoidance is, we're not going to break any rules, but it's okay to pay as little as possible.
Yes,
tax
exactly.
Tax evasion and tax avoidance are two different things. We're not going to evade our taxes.
Yes.
We're going to avoid them legally.
We're going to avoid, do so legally, and you can help people figure that out. I had a question. You had bronchitis, I think, last week, so you failed, weren't able to join us, but I had a question from one of our listeners. They wanted to see if there was any aha moments or takeaways from the accounting and finance conference that you spoke at. They wanted to kind of get a brief report from you.
Well, it was a great conference. I guess one of my ahas was that people thought that my session was one of the best ones there. So that's a good thing and a bad thing. I'm surprised.
It means you're back. Yeah.
It's nice to hear. So I think that the fact that we are getting consensus around the interest rate lock commitment, unrealized gain, transitional costs, the transformational costs that have to be applied to come up with an accurate derivative asset is starting to really get legs. People are starting to realize that an IRLC isn't tradable on an open market. You can't just call up your broker and sell it like you can a TBA short position. So clearly you have to do more cost applied to it. So there's some big-name folks who are are starting to come on board with the perspective.
That's good.
You know, accounting is accounting, and some of the valuation issues around MSRs continue to plague folks. Some folks are thinking that if they had a choice, they would have not adopted market value for MSRs. It would have been better to have stayed as a lower cost to market. But you can't go backwards. So
nope.
The aha moments for me was simply the fact that accountants are starting to agree on some of these technical and complicated issues, which is good.
That's good. Well, they're getting good leadership because they keep bringing you back to teach them on this. Can't think of anyone better to do that with. So,
well, thank you.
Talk on
this
more complicated. Well, you do a great job of taking the complex and making it simple, or at least easier to understand. I appreciate
that.
Well,
the MBA has some really good folks. You know, Fran Morty, Marina Walsh, Fred and Tony was there. I mean, there's a lot of really talented people at the MBA who help contribute to make these conferences great.
Well, if you want to get some more information, make sure you're doing it right. Get a hold of Andy at MBS team. I blew that, Andy. Give him your email address. I'm sorry.
You can spell Andy your home free. So Andy@MBS-team.com.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you, Andy. Appreciate it so much. Have a great trip.
Thanks,
enjoy
Andy.
That. Say hi to Teresa and look forward to talking and having you back next week with an update on how your training went. And we're focusing on an area in these podcasts of a trend that I am seeing show up with more consistency across the market, and that is an increasing number of first-time home buyers, as well as those that are been in the market for a while, are going to the internet to start the process. I actually have two clients where they're originating all of their business through Facebook ads, drawing them into an experience on their own website, and then at that point, they've captured the borrower. Then they're picking up and calling the realtor, say, hey, I've got some leads for you, and I kid you not, one realtor said he picked up a box of donuts dropped off by another mortgage company to try to get them to send a business, took that box of donuts, dropped them to that mortgage company, or brought them to the mortgage company that's providing him leads, and said, here's some donuts. Do you have some more of those good leads? Folks, the world is changing. And more people are going to the internet. We know that. You look at what the shopping craze that's going on. Amazon stock had a crazy high with what's going on with online shopping. We are seeing a shift in the mortgage industry. So it's important that we understand that. So we put together a series of programs on this very topic. And today we have as our guest Dave Shalabro. Dave is, again, very experienced in this area. He's been in marketing. He was introduced to me by a good friend, and we'll tell you all about it in this recording. So we caught up with him yesterday morning, and he's traveling, so we had to pre-record this. So without further ado, let's get over to the interview that I recorded yesterday on this very important topic. Folks, we're excited to have with us today David Shalabro. David was introduced to me by a mutual friend who I have a tremendous respect for. His name is Dale Vermillion, one of the nation's leading coaches when it comes to sales. So when I get an introduction from Dale Vermillion that says, you got to meet this guy, his name is Dave Shalabro, he is the best at marketing, hands down, I've seen in the industry. So I took it seriously, and I tell you, I'm really impressed with what Dave knows, and we're very fortunate to have formed an affiliation between our two companies. We work closely together, and we're excited to have him on the program. David, good to have you here, friend.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
Dave, tell me and to our listeners why you think inbound marketing is the future of the mortgage industry.
So it's hunting versus farming. And when I came into the mortgage market or the mortgage industry, that was the thing that I noticed first was how people got their leads, how they met their customers. And a lot of it was hunting. I was introduced to things like credit trigger mail and, you know, and saw we sent these pieces out when somebody would have their credit pulled from another company. And to me, it sort of looked like we were out deer hunting. Somebody took a shot at the deer, missed the deer. And then, you know, the deer starts to run off down the woods and 10 other hunters jump up, start shooting at the same deer. Only one of those people are going to eat, right? So I look at that, I call that hunting. And hunting isn't sustainable because if tribes go out to try to find game to go back and feed the village, only one tribe is going to eat and they're competing against each other. Whereas farming, you know, somebody has a plot of land, they own this piece of land, they work the soil, they plant the seeds, they grow the crops, and then everybody eats. And as the tribe grows, the land can grow, the crops can grow, and everybody gets to eat. And inbound is more of the farming technique. Think about it like dating. You know, I always say that...
I love that analogy. You know, it's a very good analogy.
Yeah, it's sort of like, okay, so I get introduced to somebody through a lead that I bought, and it's sort of like this hot, you know, hot date. I'm getting this hookup from my lead vendor, and I'm trying to close the deal on the first date. Well, again, that typically ends badly. It'd be like if the ultimate goal is marriage, and you get introduced to somebody and you're trying to marry them on the first date, something's going to end bad. You don't really know the other person. They don't really know you. And if you come up with a transaction at that point, there's going to be buyer's remorse somewhere down the road because somebody didn't get their questions answered. And inbound marketing is more of a dating process. It's about building a relationship. It's about, you know, one party getting to know the other party, understanding their needs, somebody's getting their questions answered, and it establishes trust. And when there's a relationship built on trust, that's a lasting relationship. And in the mortgage space, that's a relationship you want because retention is so important and referrals are so important. And if you don't have that good relationship built on trust, you miss out on the referrals and you miss out on the retention.
You talk about four stages of inbound marketing, and I think you refer to them as pillars, four pillars. Talk about those.
So attract is the first stage, right? And people have said in the past, they used to call it AIDA, attract, interest, desire, and action was sort of the old marketing funnel.
Right.
And that funnel is sort of an old broken funnel because attract, interest, desire, and action was based on the fact that marketers could tell anybody anything about their product and there wasn't any reliable sources to back up their claims, right? So, I mean, cigarette companies used to go out and tell people, hey, smoking's fine. 9 out of 10 doctors recommend it, you know, and there was nothing really behind it. And with the onset of the internet, that's all broken because people can get the information that they need and that they're looking for, and they can get to the truth about your product or your company very quickly. So the old model of this, hey, let's just, you know, put that big waving guy on the parking lot and get people onto our used car lot and sell them a car, is sort of broken. You know, Carfax breaks that because now I can try to sell you a car and a used car lot, but you can go get a subscription to Carfax and find out everything you want to know about the car, right? You have a restaurant and I want to go to your restaurant. I can read reviews. I could see what other people are saying about it. So the model's changed a little bit. So attract is really about helping people identify where they are in the buying process, right? I might have a problem, but I'm not aware of what the problem is. I'm experiencing the symptoms. So sort of like going on WebMD, I'm going to search my symptoms. What's wrong with me? Why am I having this, right? And in the attract phase, you put information out in the world, you know, usually via the internet, that has to do with what the person's pain points are, what their goals are, what their challenges might be, what their objections might be, and what their marketing triggers might be. And you do this based around what's called a buyer persona.
Talk about the buyer persona. I thought that was really interesting.
So a buyer persona is specifically who's your ideal customer, right? Everybody, and this is another thing that I see a lot in the mortgage business, is that everybody says, well, everybody's a potential customer. But the reality is you can't be great at everything and you can't compete with everyone for everything. So it's much easier to start looking at your customers in terms of like buckets or niches. What are you really good at? Are you, if you're a VA lender, you know, maybe VA is your thing. And there's lenders out there who only do VA loans and they become experts on VA.
Yeah,
you know, as a loan officer, you might be working with people to help them after a divorce get the other party off of the title by refinancing a loan. And not a lot of people know that you need to do that. So some people might declare that as their niche. But whatever it is, how you make money and where you make money and where you can scale starts to become your niche. And you find that through your financials, you find that through your turn times. And you know, there's a lot of math looking at your ROI. But once you can determine that, you can start to narrow down what your markets are. And then you start looking specifically at who those people are. What are their age? What are their gender? What are their incomes? Their buying habits? What sort of occupations might they have? And you start to build this profile of what this person looks like and what their goals are, what their objections might be, what things might they say out loud.
Someone might say, well, I'm trying to get him a mortgage. What do I care about all that stuff? Explain why that is so important in this new world of marketing to have a good understanding of who your customer is.
Well, if you think about it, you know, you've got a wide spectrum. And let's just take the age demographic for a second. You know, you might be looking at reverse mortgages are going to be people that are, you know, over 60 years old. And a lot of the refinances take place, you know, people who are 45 and older. And first-time home buyers might be 25 to 35 years old. So what's important to them and the questions that they're trying to ask and resolve are going to be very, very different. I mean, somebody who's 60 years old has bought houses before. They have the experience. They're not looking for answers about how do I buy a house. But somebody who's 25, 30 years old, who's buying their first house, who might be riddled with student debt and think they can't qualify, has very different questions than somebody who's 50 years old.
Yeah, what you're getting to is the age differences. I mean, the great one is the questions being asked of a first-time home buyer are going to be substantially different than someone who's on their third home looking to refinance to put their kids through college or finance a wedding or get ready for retirement in the case of a reverse mortgage. So can you make a few suggestions for our listeners on how to determine the pain points or the challenges that these various groups of potential customers are facing?
So, you know, when I work with a lender and we're in the stage of looking at their buyer personas, you know, we're going to find out where they have success and where they have failure. And we're going to take those opportunities or those, you know, applications that came in that didn't close, we're going to put them in one bucket. We're going to look at the things that closed and made the money in another bucket. And we'll start to look at what they have in common. You know, is it age? Is it geographic? Is it the type of loan? Is it the loan size? Is it the credit bucket? You know, what makes them successful and then what makes them not successful? And then we'll dig a little deeper. I'll ask questions of loan officers and we'll ask questions of processors and underwriters and say during the process, what's important to them? What pain points do they have? What questions are they asking? And I think that's the easiest way to go about it is once you have identified your personas, who they are, you know, what age they are, what gender they are, where they live, what are they after, right? We can start asking loan officers because they're usually the first line of questions that are being answered. And you look at this premise of inbound as simply they ask, you answer. Somebody's going to ask you questions. You need to have the answers for them. You need to provide helpful, relevant information to move somebody through the sales process.
To help in this, Dave, to really learn who your customer is, we've got so many more tools today than we ever had before. That which really opens the door to Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, various ways in which you can learn about your prospective customer. How important are these tools?
Well, they're very important. So, you know, it depends on where your customer lives. And based on when I say where they live, where do they get their information from? Where do they spend their time? Are they on Facebook? Are they on LinkedIn? Are they on Twitter? Are they, you know, searching Google? Are they on blogs? Are they watching TV? Are they just reading newspapers? Depending upon where your ideal buyer persona is, it's sort of where you need to go to meet them where they are and get the information in front of them and give them answers where they're seeking answers. And you could do this through blogging, you know, very, very important to have a blog on your website. You know, in 2017, I certainly wouldn't recommend that anybody doesn't have a blog on their website. Search engine optimization, which, you know, you're going to look at in terms of on-site content, which would be the sections of your website, how your website's broken down, and then the blogs underneath it to give you topic clusters. You can use social media as a great tool because social media is now basically an information aggregator. And that's an important concept to remember, that social media is an information aggregator. So using Facebook, for example, I can follow my favorite sports teams. I can see the scores. I can see what family members are doing. And I could like somebody's business to get information on what they're publishing. I might even like some news channels so that everything I want to learn about during the course of a day, I'm just flipping my thumb up and I'm reading about everything that interests me in one place.
And that's a big part of what we're talking about in this series of podcasts, how social media can be so effective. But there's so much more. Let's move on to the convert stage, getting contact information and getting in contact with them. What do you recommend that's working for people today?
So this is a conversion of a prospect to a lead, not a lead to a sale. So we have to make sure that we have convert in the right context. And this is where I go from seed to what I would call sprout in the whole harvest example. And it's about how do you get their contact information? So you're getting permission from that person to communicate with them more freely, more openly, more directly and specifically about what they want to know. And the way that you might do that in the attract phase, they might have found your blog through search engine. You know, they might have Googled a keyword or a question that they were looking for and your blog came up, or they saw the information that you targeted to their newsfeed in Facebook or LinkedIn or Twitter, and they've come to your website to read more about it. And on that page where they're reading about it, there might be a secondary offer for what I would call premium content. This might be an ebook, a guide to buying a home, a checklist for VA borrowers, that sort of thing. So you're exchanging value for value, which means you're asking them for maybe their first name, last name, and email address and permission to communicate. And in exchange, you're giving them something that's of value to them, which might be a guide, like I said, a checklist, a calculator, a worksheet, something that's going to help them through the buying process.
I like that. When you're looking at the convert stage, what are the most important features that you would recommend, or what are the most important things at the convert stage that lenders do to make sure they don't skip over anything that is important in this part of the process?
So when you're exchanging information and value, so in other words, you're getting the consumer's information, you're giving them something, you need to be very, very clear in setting expectations on what is the customer getting when they give you the information. So, you know, you do this through your landing page and your call to action. Your call to action might be download first-time home buyer's guide, and you click on the button. And you know, when you click on the button and you give your information, you're expecting now to get a home buyer's guide. So you fill out the information on the landing page, which should be all above the fold, very clear, concise, again, very specific about what you're getting. And at that point, you want to take the navigation off the header, so there's nowhere else to navigate. The focus is on now collecting and exchanging information. And once they do that, you want to have a thank you page come up and tell them what happens next. Did they get the download automatically loading to their computer? Is it going to be emailed to them? If it is, when? What happens next? What can they expect to get out of the ebook? What kind of information can they get? How can they contact you if they have more questions? And I usually recommend you do that also with a bounce back email that you can set up through marketing automation, that when somebody fills out a form, they download some information, that you've got a workflow already programmed where they could get the, you know, it redirect to a thank you page, then they might get a follow-up email.
Dave, that's really interesting. In fact, we're going to be talking about an ebook offer you're going to offer our listeners here a little bit later on in our interview. So for tracking with you so far and continuing with your farming analogy, we've planted seeds and we brought that ideal prospect or that seed along in the relationship. It's grown to the point where you've taken them through the sprout stage or the convert stage, and now our potential customer is ready to close on that loan. You call this the harvest stage. What does this look like as our prospects pass through the harvest stage and get ready to close on this loan?
So the close is transforming that information into a lead, right? Even though you've gotten maybe the first name, last name, and an email address, that's you're really just in the introduction phase of, let's call this just like dating, right? We're in the introduction phase. You've given me your number. You said, hey, call me back. Let's get together again. We're going to exchange more information. We're going to get to know each other a little bit. And during this process of conversion, you're exchanging information and maybe you're getting more information about them. You're finding out what their goals are, what their needs are. And as you get the information that you need, you're moving through stages of, you know, what I would call MQL to SQL. And an MQL is a marketing qualified lead. That's somebody who's responded to your inbound marketing, who's showing intent. And what you want to do is get them to the point where they also have, you know, certain basic qualifications. So you could hand that lead off to sales, and that MQL becomes an SQL, which is a sales qualified lead. And that measure is usually determined between what I would call an SLR, which is a service level agreement between your marketing team and your sales team, which is basically an agreement that outlines when I have a lead, I expect these qualifications and this level intent out of the lead for it to be passed to sales. And then sales is committing to marketing that's saying, when you give me a lead that has these qualifications and this level of intent, here's how many times we're going to attempt to call the lead. Here's what we're going to do. Here's how we're going to follow up. And then here's how we're going to manage that lead or keep that lead on a leash.
I like that. A lead on a leash. You don't want to let the lead get away from you. Talk about tools you use for closing, how to get the sale. How important is a CRM, for example?
I think a CRM in this day and age is extremely important. We're dealing with a lot of information. We're dealing with a lot of prospects, a lot of leads, a lot of customers, and loan officers are expected to do more and more in terms of transactions, it seems like, every month. So keeping track of that information and understanding where your customer is in the buying cycle is critical. You can't remember every conversation you've had with every person. So a CRM gives you the opportunity to understand where somebody is in the buying cycle, which conversations you've had before, and possibly what pages on your website they visited, what emails they've opened. So you can have a more intelligent conversation with the buyer about specifically where they are in the journey.
David, tell us the difference between a CRM, a customer relationship management technology, and a marketing automation, because that can be confusing to some.
Right, marketing automation platform, sort of where we're keeping track of somebody electronically, we're cookieing their browser, and we're trying to get information about where they've gone so we can stay a step ahead of them in terms of the information we put in front of them. CRM is more for the salesperson to, its real name is a customer relationship management platform, and it's basically where you keep your notes. You know, just like in the old days where we would write things down in a notebook every time we talked to somebody, this is our electronic notebook that helps us organize our conversations and tell us what we need to do next or what we've done in the past.
As our customer moves out of the third stage, which you again refer to as the harvest stage, and into the final stage, which you refer to now as the delight stage or the bounty stage, can you elaborate on what you mean by this?
Think about it like, so instead of planting a crop, I planted an orchard and I'm growing trees. And the difference between growing trees and growing a crop is that when I grow a crop, I have to start over every season. I have to till the ground all over again. I have to plant new seeds and I have to wait for that crop to grow before I can harvest. Whereas when I plant an orchard, I'm basically maintaining the trees that I have and I'm taking care of them. And every year, the better I take care of my trees, And again, regardless of drought or weather conditions, my trees aren't going anywhere like a crop might fail. But each year, as I take care of those trees, I'm going to yield more and more fruit off of each tree the better I take care of my tree. And that's sort of what I'm talking about in the bounty, is that when your tree is ripe for harvest, every year that you take care of it, every time you prune it, every time you've taken care of that tree, and it's a little bit less work than planting, your yield from that tree grows. And in marketing, we would call this your customer lifetime value. So there's two important measures in marketing. And one is obviously the cost per acquisition that everybody's always looking at. And there's three ways that you can go in cost per acquisition. It can go down, which is what's preferred, so that over time, the cost for acquiring a loan becomes cheaper and cheaper and cheaper because your brand is growing and your brand equity is growing and people know you. Your cost per acquisition could stay flat, which means you're struggling and you're paying for every new customer, but your experience isn't so bad that you're creating damage. When your cost per acquisition is going up, that means you typically have a terrible customer experience. You probably have a bad online reputation, and it's costing you more and more money in marketing to acquire a new loan. And customer lifetime value is the measure of, I've invested $1,000 to get my first loan, but over the course of time, that loan is yielding me, I've got the original loan, they've come back and done two refinances, they referred two of their friends, right? So I'm getting both the original loan, the retention, and I'm getting referrals off of the same marketing.
It's amazing how much money people are paying for leads, I mean, fresh new leads, and we have a database of all these customers we've talked about. So once you start working with a customer and have created a successful, hopefully in a successful conclusion for them, how important is, and what are your recommendations for the referrals, and holding them, the retention of that customer, so when they have their next refinance need, whatever number of years there are down the road, 5, 10 years down the road, that you're going to be top of mind. You're going to be the person they're going to be coming back and looking for.
So marketing should be viewed as not a pass-through funnel, but an infinite funnel, so that when they close the deal, that lead or that loan has come through, it's converted. But it goes back to the MQL stage, which means that it goes back into marketing hands to nurture this. And you nurture a closed loan with information about maybe where they are in their payments, what the market's doing, opportunities to pay your loan down faster. Let's say somebody took cash out to pay off some debt. How to continue to stay debt-free. It's sort of like I went on a diet and I lost all this weight, but I want to maintain that, right? So give me great information to help me maintain what my goal was. And if you do that and you continue to build that relationship after the sale, that somebody's affection towards you or their view of you as an expert grows, and they're not going to start out and build a new relationship with another mortgage company. They're going to come right back to you because you keep providing them the information that they need ahead of when they need it so that you're continually solving their problem. And when you do that, people love to talk about it. They're going to tell their friends, wow, this is a great experience I've had with this company. If you ever do a mortgage, you really need to talk to these guys. They're fantastic. I've done 2 mortgages with them, 3 mortgages with them, and I'm so happy. And it's sort of like the life insurance model, right? It's this customer for life mentality.
David, what are some of the tools that you recommend our listeners use to help with the inbound marketing process?
So at the very core, I'm going to recommend that most people have some sort of CRM. You know, we've all heard there's a lot of things that are called CRMs that are really email nurturing or email drip campaigns, but it's really not a CRM. A CRM is something you've heard the Salesforce has a CRM and real big name in the CRM business. And HubSpot also has a CRM that's free that you can get for free, and you can keep your information and manage your information. And that, think of that sort of like your database and keeping track of the information that you're getting from the customers and the stages of your customers' buying cycle. And then the other piece you want to start looking towards is marketing automation. How do you build your information? How do you distribute that information? And then how do you automate the processes and workflows? So, you know, I'm building, let's say, blogs, and I want that blog to go to my website. I want it to post on Facebook. I want it to go to LinkedIn. How do I manage all that? Do I have to log into each one of the social media sites, my website, to post this? Or are there platforms that allow me to do this from one place? And then we'll manage and measure the results from that. And that would be your marketing automation platform. And so when somebody, you put that content out there, they come back, they fill out a landing page, you can automate the processes in the workflow. And that might be, hey, I'm going to send you out an email. I'm going to schedule a phone call. I'm going to redirect you to a landing page. I'm going to move you into this campaign. That's marketing automation. And Salesforce has their marketing automation tools. They call it Pardot. And then, but again, here's where I go back to HubSpot. It's an all-in-one tool where you could have the marketing automation, the CRM, and even some sales tools all built into one, so that everything is talking seamlessly to each other, moving the sales process along.
You are a certified sales expert in HubSpot, and you recommended to me that we use that tool, and I see others that are leading companies doing that. Talk briefly about HubSpot and why you selected that tool. Is it because of the full integration of from sales to marketing CRM? Is there any other features that our listeners should know about?
I'm a HubSpot partner. I use it on my own website. And having been, you know, a chief marketing officer both in the e-commerce space and in the mortgage space, I've had the opportunity to work with a lot of different CRMs and marketing automation tools. And some of them are so simple that they don't do anything that you really need them to do. And others are so complicated that just setting the CRM or the marketing automation platform up could take you a year, and you're not going to see the ROI for so long that you get frustrated and throw it away. And what I loved about HubSpot is how it's come along and how easy it is to use and how easy it is to move into the system and take a piece at a time and effectively start utilizing that and seeing an ROI from it. And again, I look at companies who use their own tools to grow. And that's essentially what HubSpot has done. In the past 10 years, I've seen them, you know, come from a small startup company using their CRM, their marketing automation, and their sales tools to basically becoming a publicly traded company now. I was at Inbound in September. There's 20,000 people attending HubSpot's Inbound conference. I mean, it is a growing, growing platform.
It's an amazing piece of technology. We probably need to have you back just to talk about all the technology solutions. We'll get on Alan Pollack with us on the next interview when we cover some of those and what works about them and what you recommend, because you certainly have studied this and know the space extremely well. David, you've got a great offer for our listeners. It's an ebook that you put together. It's called Inbound Marketing for Mortgage Lenders, one that I recommend each of our listeners download and read. How can they get a hold of this book?
They can click on the link to my website from Licking on Lending. And if you come to my website, navigate over to our blog, which is called Seeds for Growth, and just simply subscribe to the blog with an email. and then we will send you in return, we'll send you the free ebook.
Listeners, when you're downloading the free ebook, be sure to sign up for David's 30-minute free consultation on your marketing strategy. David, thank you so much for being here with us. It's been a pleasure. A lot of information. We got to have you back, as I've already can tell you, there's a lot of questions that will be coming in that we need to dive into almost into each one of these segments. Thank you so much for being here. Have a great day.
Thank you, David. Appreciate you having me on.
Folks, that was a great interview, and I encourage you to go back and listen to it. There is so much information. Alice, I want to get your thoughts on this. So you guys do a great job of marketing there at Union Home. Your thoughts? Then I'll get over to Alan. Alice is muted out. Let's see if we can get let's get over to Alan Pollock. I'm going to get to you, then we'll come back to Alice if she has any feedback.
Sounds good. Well, you know, I can tell you I have used a few of these platforms in the past, and they're very complex. They're also very simple, but you know, what's kind of funny is there's been a trend of user behavior tracking. And I just want to talk about that component of it. There's information that you can install or little components of code on your website. And what they do is they track what a user clicks, and they even record it in real time. So when you talk about how you're marketing, how you're bringing people to your site, how you're looking at what the information they read on your site, where they spend that time, how much time they spend, or what attracts their mouse to click. This tracks that information. So not only can you see it in real time, but you can use the analytics it provides to better fine-tune your marketing message. And so I thought that was pretty cool, and David was talking very much like that. And I think even our industry will use more of that as time grows.
Yeah, it's really true. Let's get over to Andy real fast, and then we'll see if Alice has got her microphone on. Andy?
Hey, Dave. Well, I thought it was really interesting. He's got some interesting quotes on his website. Shoot small, aim small, and stop wasting time. You know, I think it's worth exploring more. Nothing is as simple as it seems. There's a lot of pieces to this to make
Great
it be
point.
Effective and to work. Lots of discipline to make it be effective, otherwise everybody would be doing it. So, but I think it's definitely worth pursuing. I think we should definitely get that ebook. I'm actually on his website trying to find how to get it, and it's not quite as obvious as it seems. We may have to update the Lick on Lending website to
well,
show people
we'll get
better.
The link. Yeah, we'll get pulled up link. Get that link to make sure it gets right over to it. But I've read the ebook. I read it last night. And it was really good. Again, it's a lot of things you heard here, but sometimes this is one of those areas. For me, this is the third time I've listened. I recorded it, then I listened to the recording after we edited it, and then I listened to it just now again. And every time I've gone through this, there's a lot of information there. I encourage people to download the book, get that. You deal with complicated topics, Andy, all the time with accounting, and certainly marketing is one of the more complicated aspects of it. Alice, are you there? Do we have your mic on now?
Oh, yeah. I'm so sorry, Dave. I didn't realize I was still dialed in. I thought I got disconnected. You're probably hearing some crazy background noise as I dropped off my
That's
back
all right. That's all right. That's all right. No problem. But you heard the interview. What are your thoughts? Do you see more of a trend with what you're doing there at Union Home? A lot of people are interested with you're one of the few out there in the marketplace doing this. You are in the market, and you guys are doing some innovative things there. So thoughts as you listen to this.
Yeah, it is really interesting because it was a big discussion for me anyway, for several as I talked to people at the annual conference on, you know, what is the role of the retail loan officer versus consumer direct lending? And so what our guest was talking about was hugely relevant to both, right? So,
yes.
You know, no matter which way you think the market is going, how you market, how you handle those leads, and kind of really thinking of the whole thing in terms of that person's experience. And, you know, we have a customer for life program, and we do a lot of things that he talked about already. But I think he had some unique ideas on how to make sure your retail loan officers in particular are adopting some of the same things that the consumer direct folks already are mastering.
Yeah, it's a great point. I like the idea of being an orchardist. In other words, running an orchard, you know, maintaining the tree that's there, and that's that initial relationships and how to continue to get harvest off of that. It's very, very good. So anyway, I'll tell you, I look forward to
–
Yeah, go ahead.
I had one
yes.
more quick thing. So he talked about, you know, the kind of a handoff from marketing, right? So, and I don't know how many, you know, again, back to the retail loan officer model, how does it survive, you know, how many of – folks in that position see themselves as, you know, they see the realtor as the tree, right? And that realtor
right.
is the one who's going to produce those, you know,
that's
that
what's changing
for them all the time. But what's changing is that they have to really be harvesting more, and they have, and the idea of, I have a marketing person who has an SLA as to the condition that they pass me the lead in, before then I work on it, and then there's more conditions for them when I pass lines. So I thought that was a
great point.
Concept too.
Yeah, it is. It's a great concept, and that's the shift we're seeing, and that's of course what we're trying to bring to our listeners and help them recognize what we think is a game-changing shift in the mortgage industry. So it's a tectonic shift. More and more people are going out there and are forming those relationships. The consumer persona, I thought that was interesting. And then the orchardist versus just planting seeds every single time you want a new crop. So good stuff. Thank you so much, Alice. And Alan, we need to talk more about this when we get into the Tech Stack Radio, because a lot of technology goes into this piece of this new marketing. By the way, everybody, I want to let you know that I just heard from Paul, our producer or our program director. He said the Lincoln Lending website, Lincoln Lending website, go to that, and you will find, not the Blog Talk website, go to Lincoln Lending website, and you'll find a link that'll get you over to the blog, Harvest ROI blog, and you'll be able to find the ebook. So good to have you with us, everybody. Have a great week. Looking forward to continuing our conversation in this whole area next week. And so be sure to check back with us. Talk to you soon, everybody. Bye.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.